trust me.
Dude, you trust me.
Trust me. I'm like a smart person.
Yeah, I've never lied to you. I never have lied to you.
You think that one person has all the answers?
Don't!
Welcome to Trust Me, the podcast about cults, extreme belief, and the abuse of power from two subs who've actually experienced it. My name is Lola Blanc.
And I'm Megan Elizabeth.
Today, our guest is Nicoletta Heidegger. She is a marriage and family therapist who specializes in sex. She's also a sexologist and host of podcast Sluts and Scholars, which is, of course, all about sex. So in this interview, she teaches us 101 of BDSM and kink, what consensual play looks like, and signs that your BDSM relationship has crossed over into non-consensual or abusive.
We also talk about slave contracts, sex education in general, Army Hammer, and how cannibalism fantasies are not inherently harmful, but insisting on playing without a safe word can be.
That is right. I learned so much in this interview.
Me too.
I feel prepared to go out and like find me a dom.
I mean, this interview blew my mind. I didn't realize how sheltered from this world I truly am.
We should also probably give a trigger warning because we are going to get into some abuse talk.
Yeah.
And lots of kink talk. So, you know, don't have the kids listen to this one, maybe.
Mm-mm-mm.
But hey, before we do that, so Megan, what was the cultiest thing that happened to you this week?
Okay. So I had a friend who was for sure a narcissist, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of cut her out. And then this week, I found myself doing a favor for her.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so why?
I don't know. That's the thing. I mean, it came out of, like, nowhere. It really seems like it just fell out of the sky. But then if I look at myself, I'm like, oh, I think I've been extra stressed and anxious. And maybe it helps me unconsciously to have somebody that stable in their wrongness.
So consistently wrong.
Anyway, I was like, well, this is bad. So I'm going to try to get back on the straight and narrow with that one.
So she, I mean, I'm assuming it's a she. I'm assuming gender here.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Okay. Did she just like hit you up out of nowhere and ask you for something?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
That sounds healthy.
Yeah. No, it's perfect.
Sometimes I feel like we want to be the bigger person, even though someone has wronged us and we feel like it. I don't know if this is you, but for me, I'm like, yeah, it's okay that you've been terrible and shitty to me. I'm taking the high road. But then, of course, it's just not having good boundaries sometimes.
Nope, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I'm not a narcissist, but I'm absolutely an awful person in many ways. So I'm not like judging her or anything. But, you know, it is a whole cult thing to be friends with that kind of a person. You are drawn into their orbit. So What was the cultiest thing that happened to you?
Well, so there has been a big news item this week that I am like sort of connected to.
What?
And it brought up a lot of things for me yesterday. So Evan Rachel Wood finally named Marilyn Manson as the abusive partner that she's been talking about for a long time. And we all knew it was Marilyn Manson. But she officially named him, and four other women also came forward. And the things he did were like pretty horrific. He's like very abusive. And all of these women have PTSD. All of these women were extremely controlled, assaulted. You know, it's actually kind of relevant to what we're talking about today, because some of what he did, I think he would try to pass off as like being kinky.
Mm-hmm.
Or just being like a weirdo, because he's like the goth boy, and goth Precisely. Boys just do weird shit, you
right.
know. And I do think that's how he got away with it for so long, because that was part of his persona. But so the thing that makes me connected to it is that I actually dated him for a couple of weeks
Ooh.
A few years ago. And I like wrote a song about it. And it's like out there that this happened between us. There's like an article that mentions it and whatever. So I know that this man is abusive, but he wasn't abusive to me. So that's a whole nother thing. I'm like, well, I can't like participate in this conversation. I don't need to participate in this conversation. This is these women's story.
Right.
But it is weird to have somebody that you did date be this figure, you know, because
yeah.
I'm like, why did I date that person. Mm-hmm. We've talked about love bombing, obviously, right?
Yeah, I'm sure we've mentioned it, but go on.
Well, love bombing is exactly what it sounds like. It's a very common cult tactic. Anyone who's new to the term, it's basically just showering somebody with praise and affection and adoration and making them feel so special and so wanted. And Manson, he wouldn't let me call him Brian. He made me call him Manson.
Hilarious.
Totally did this to me. 100%. I have a line in my song that I wrote, which is literally about all of the love bombing. And here's the thing. I knew it at the time. And mm-hmm. I even said to my friends, I was like, he's love bombing me. This is like not real. None of this is real. This is like right. clearly a very unhealthy person. But I didn't know anything about his history of what he had done to other women. I just was like, oh, Marilyn Manson, this rock icon, yeah. slid into my DMs after seeing me in something and has like selected me, mm-hmm. you know. And even though he's a raging alcoholic and a raging drug addict, like I have never seen, like drinking vodka like it's water and saying like fucked up things and behaving like an insane person, I still was so interested in the experience of dating that person mm-hmm. that I was like, okay, well, this is definitely going to go badly, but I'm not going to not do it.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. he like was trying to get me to go on tour with him. And I was like, I have a life. I can't like drop my life. I have a dog. I can't like drop my life right now. And then he promptly ghosted me after I refused to like immediately go on tour with him, which is for the best. And I think I'm probably much safer in the end.
Yeah.
But the willingness of me as a person who is aware of all of these red flags, like keenly, keenly aware, you know, the willingness of me to get involved with somebody like that just because of his like status and because mm-hmm. it would be like a fun story potentially and putting myself at risk because of it. Like that's something that's been interesting for me to deal with this
yeah,
week.
I bet. Well, something odd that I've noticed in my life is in those moments when you do know somebody, you're like, oh, this is love bombing, but this is an exciting thing that I just want to watch where it goes. But this is what they're doing mm-hmm. to me. And like, oh, and then they're going to do this, and then they're going to do this, and then they're going to do this.
Right.
And if they don't go on tour, if they just end up living here, you know what they're going to do, but you're completely emotionally invested as if you don't. And it is right. so weird because yeah. you are completely split in half. You're like, right. I know I'm so disenchanted and like disconnected. And then this other side of you is like, I love him. It's so weird. So I'm so glad he went on tour.
Man, it's hard to resist. It really is. And I was like almost 30 at this point. So I cannot imagine. The age thing will come up in this episode. And obviously, women should be able to make their own fucking decisions.
Yeah, I did say that there should be an age limit on kink, I think. Or like people should have to be a certain age. I shouldn't have said that. But I don't know. I don't want really young girls getting in over their heads. But I'm not the president of young girls. So
no. And it's not about the girls' choices. It's about the men who are older and have power exactly. who get involved with them.
Exactly.
The truth is, and I do talk about this later on, had I been 19, oh, for sure I would have dropped my life to yeah. go with that person. Like, for sure that person would have, like, completely taken me over. No question. I would not have been able to resist the appeal of an icon.
Yeah.
I just wouldn't have. Yeah. And even at almost 30, I almost didn't. Even wow. though I was like, this guy's so fucked up. He literally was repeating himself all the time, just so drunk, throwing bottles at people, like getting in fights, like had racist shit in his house. Like it literally was like maybe 2.5 weeks, but I'm ashamed that it even went on that long.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah. I hear that.
God, so many abusive celebrities in the news this past month. We have Shia LaBeouf. We have Armie Hammer. We have Marilyn Manson. Probably more. I'm forgetting. And it all comes together. In this episode. It does it? No.
No, they don't.
Yeah. What we're trying to say here, guys, is it's important to, if you're going to explore something like BDSM, it's important to understand what the healthy version of it looks like and the unhealthy version of it looks like. So let's talk to Nicoletta now. Welcome, Nicoletta Heidegger. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me. It's so funny being on the other side of the the interview.
Yeah, welcome. Is your last name, is Martin Heidegger in your family, or is that just a common last name that I didn't know was common?
I get that question a lot, and I don't think there's any relation, which I'm fine with because I'm Jewish and he was not a big fan of Jews.
Oh, that's true.
So
right.
I'm just going to say no.
Great. So tell us about your background and what you do.
So I am a licensed marriage and family therapist. I work in a private practice in Los Angeles, and I also do equine therapy, which is like helping people in therapy with horses, which nothing to do with what we're going to talk about today.
Nice.
But my specialization in my practice is all things sex related. So sex therapy. I'm a sexologist, which basically just means that I study sex. I'm currently finishing up my PhD for that. Ooh. And yeah, when I'm not seeing clients, I also host a sex podcast called Sluts and Scholars.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Love it.
Thank you.
Have you participated in BDSM or kink as a lifestyle yourself?
Yeah, I wouldn't call myself a lifestyle person. So a lifestyle person, it's more really part of their like everyday protocol. But I definitely engage on it in my own personal partnerships. And it's something that I work with a lot of clients on.
Great. Then you're the perfect person to be talking to. So let's start with the basics. Let's help the noobs out. So BDSM stands for bondage and discipline, dominance and submission. I'm butchering words right now. Dominance and submission. And sadomasochism?
Yeah, sadism and masochism. So it's four letters that stands for like six words, like three couplings.
I learned that today. I assumed it was four words, like a noob. So describe to us what BDSM is. What does it look like? Give us the rundown.
Well, I think when a lot of people hear BDSM, if they haven't really been familiarized with it before or just know it from pop culture, they might immediately think that it has to do with like pain and whips and chains and really intense stuff. Mm. But I kind of like to think that we all have done some kind of kink or BDSM in the structures of our sex relationships, because really a lot of it is just like power play and power dynamics and the exchange of energy. And it doesn't have to be violent. It doesn't have to be require whips and chains and all those things. So mm-hmm. It's really just kind of this broad word for people who do stuff that involves some kind of power exchange, some kind of power dynamic. And to me, like, sex always includes some kind of power dynamic. So I think we're all into BDSM in some way, shape, or form.
That's a quote for the ages. Mm. Yeah, most people, I think, probably picture something like 50 Shades, where there's a red torture room and a contract. And we'll get into the contract thing later because I do want to talk about that. But so I do want to just lay out some examples of what power play can look like.
Yeah, like what kink and BDSM can look like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it can look like everything from some light spanking to being blindfolded to being tied up in some way, shape, or form. It can also look like, I don't know, having some protocol with a partner where you agree that you will always leave the toilet lid up. And that's something that like you've agreed upon together in your relationship. So something like not even sex related at all. Mm-hmm. It can be folks who are interested in latex as a fetish. It can be folks who are just interested in like playing outside the box of things and challenging their own like sexuality roles. I would say in some of my relationships, it really depends based on like what that partner is interested in. But it can also look like, you know, going to parties and events and really finding like community with a group of like-minded people who are also interested in expanding their sexual horizons.
Right, right, right. What are some of the hallmarks of a consensual BDSM relationship? What kind of conversations are happening in advance versus just guessing?
This is what I wish that like all folks could learn from kink and BDSM, and why I wish that all folks maybe acknowledge that they were somewhere on the spectrum, even if you're just having missionary, as you would call vanilla sex. So there used to be an acronym in the kink community called SSS, which stood for Safe, Sane, and Consensual. Mm. That's shifted a little bit now, but basically what that meant is that whatever you're engaging in sexually, it was safe, so you knew what the potential, you know, risks were. Sane, meaning that you were in like the right state of mind to be able to consent, and that whatever the power dynamic was, you were kind of able to agree to whatever was going to happen. And then consensual, so two or more consenting adults.
Right.
That's shifted now to another acronym called RAC, which stands for Risk Aware Consensual Kink. So they took away the word safe because some kink and BDSM practices are not quote unquote safe. Mm. Basically, there's no sex that is safe. There's just safer sex. So there are some people who get into different kinds of play, whether that involve hooks and needles or spanking or hitting, you know, just things that could potentially bruise you or hurt you physically or challenge you emotionally in some way, shape, or form. And so with that, risk aware is kind of a more broad term of like, you know the risks, but you're okay with it. Just like someone who smokes cigarettes, they probably know what the risks are, but they're like, I'm informed, I'm going to do this shit anyway. Mm. So risk aware and then consensual.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I liked a little, I felt like you skipped over something about the 50 Shades question. Are you interested in hitting that right now? Like, yeah. What did 50 Shades of Grey get wrong?
I'm a big fan of whatever fantasy you're into is fine because it's fantasy. And so for me, I would say I didn't have as many problems with 50 Shades of Grey, but that's only because I'm informed on so many other levels about kink and sex and consent and BDSM. And so I feel like I'm able to take a step back when I need to and really look at like, okay, what's potentially like abusive and not looking good in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's a lot of wrong ways to do BDSM, but obviously when it comes to consent and abuse, that's, you know, different. And so a lot of folks, though, unfortunately, 50 Shades of Grey might have been their only exposure to this or their right. first exposure.
Right.
And so it doesn't really give that new person a discerning lens on like what kink and BDSM actually can look like and what a quote unquote healthier example of it is. And so I think that's my main issue with it. It's not so much that that content was put out there. It's that we don't have comprehensive sex ed to show people what it can look like.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of that specifically, you know, I think one of the main things was that it really associated like dominance and kink and BDSM with like someone who has trauma or someone who's like fucked up beyond repair in some way, shape, or form. And while I think it's totally fine if folks are attracted to kink and BDSM because they have had trauma and they're looking to it as a way to sort of have a corrective, informed experience, it kind of reiterates this negative stereotype that there must be something wrong with you if you're into like beating somebody up consensually. Right.
That actually is the perfect segue into my next question, because this subject has come up a lot in the past couple of weeks, primarily because of the Armie Hammer stuff. And yeah, that is a really, really common perception that people who are into BDSM or into, you know, sort of extreme kink have trauma in their past that like formed that kink for them. My friend actually wanted me to ask specifically, can someone with a totally healthy childhood and background develop a similarly healthy interest in these same kinks?
Well, I don't know if I know anyone who I would say has a totally healthy upbringing in childhood.
Sure.
So if you know that person, send them my way, because I would love to hear what that looks like. But yes, of course, there's a spectrum of trauma. And I would certainly say that there are people I know who have just always been interested in it. And it was doesn't have to do with anything that they can maybe put their finger on or any, you know, standout trauma. And I know lots of people who have had trauma who have turned to kink and BDSM as kind of part of their a therapeutic way to regain their own sense of power and claiming of their sexuality. And I think that can be really powerful.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Do you recommend when people explore this that they do see a therapist at first? Yeah,
I would say certainly yes. I mean, I think with anything that we're trying that's new, right, it's good to have a little more insight on yourself and what's leading to this. I don't think you need to know an answer to like, why am I interested in this in a way that's shaming you? But it's kind of maybe part of that risk aware thing of like, what is this going to trigger for me? Do I know what my triggers are? How do I take care of myself when triggers do come up? How do I communicate my needs? And if that's not something that you've explored with yourself, then I think things can get a little more dangerous.
Right. Right.
So let's get into I want to use the Armie Hammer stuff as a jumping off point here. So if anyone's not up to speed, because I do know a number of people who still think that the messages were fake.
Oh, boy.
Armie Hammer, he's been in the news recently for his cannibalistic messages, which at first just seemed kind of funny and people were saying they were fake. Now it seems like they definitely were not, because he has two different ex-girlfriends separate from that account that was posting that have now come out and said that not only did he bring up consuming them in their relationships and talking about breaking their ribs and barbecuing them and drinking their blood, not only was there the cannibalism stuff, which is its own kink, which I would also love to talk about. But more importantly, one of the exes said he did things she wasn't comfortable with. He told one of his exes that it was more fun without a safe word. I'm mixing up which woman I'm talking about, but bear with me here. One of them said it was too much, quote, too much, having a belt clasped around her neck. And all he said was yes, and he clasped it anyway. And these are much younger women, it seems, most of the time. He's a very famous, powerful man in his 30s. These are women who are, it seems like, largely new to kink and new to BDSM. And this is their first experience. And some of them are kind of just now realizing that they weren't necessarily as consensual as they thought they were at the time. Are there specific things in there that are red flags for you of like what is not a consensual encounter?
Yeah, if you're hooking up with someone who says it's more fun without a safe word, run for the fucking hills.
Yeah.
Ongoing consent, I think, is crucial, as well as check-ins. One of the kind of basic check-ins for like kink beginners, and I honestly tell this to couples of mine who don't identify as kinky or into BDSM, is like the red light, yellow light, green light. Mm. And so just asking a partner, like, what's your color? So red means like, stop, I need to get out of this immediately, like untie me, you know, ASAP. Mm-hmm. Yellow is like, oh, something's feeling a little funny, like we need to check in. And green is like, hit me harder. But I think it's up to you to come up with whatever you want that to look like with whoever you're playing with. But no safe word, I think, is never a good idea. And when we talk about safe words too, it's also important to acknowledge that one of the stress and trauma responses in the body is what's known as a freeze response. And so if you don't know what that is, it's basically like when you're driving and you see a rabbit or a squirrel run out in front of your car and it stops and looks at you like right in front of your car. Mm. That's the animal freeze response. And so when we are frozen, we may become nonverbal. Mm-hmm. We may not feel like we can say anything. And that doesn't mean that we want things to happen.
Right.
And so when we say safe words, sometimes it's words, but sometimes it's also check in. Sometimes it's a body gesture that two or more playing partners have agreed to beforehand. And that's why ongoing check-ins are important. So I would say that's a red flag of not having a safe word. Mm-hmm. I feel like I need to shout this out because I'm sure it like grosses people out, but like the cannibalism and what some people would call vore. I don't know if you've heard the word vore, but mm-hmm. vore is basically the like desire to consume or be consumed by someone.
Right.
And so that doesn't have to necessarily look like cannibalism, but it's kind of this like almost this desire to be like absorbed by somebody. And for me, that in and of itself, if you're finding consensual people to like do that with in a risk aware way, like no problem. I mean, I don't know if I would go as far to, you know, I know there was this famed guy on Craigslist who was in right. Germany who was like, come kill me and eat me, basically, and found someone to do that. Like, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it because it's like, was this consensual? Was this informed? I guess right. it's risk aware. You know, you're going to die.
Right.
But I would say in and of itself, like none of that is bothersome to me if you are informed about it and if you know the safety risks and hazards. Someone like Armie Hammer, it doesn't seem like, I mean, look, I don't know him. He's not my client, so I can't totally psychoanalyze him, but it does seem like he's not informed, or there was certainly like shame around some of these things, which is understandable. But as a result, it doesn't sound like he got any proper education tools of like how to discuss something beforehand, how to provide aftercare. Aftercare meaning let's check in about what we did. What felt good? What didn't feel good? Was there anything triggering? What would you like to see happen differently next time?
Right.
It was very one-sided.
Right.
And dominant doesn't mean one-sided.
Oh, that is such an important point. Because I've been trying to articulate it when talking about it with friends. I'm like, no, the person who's submitting, they're supposed to have power. It just is maybe not visible in the way that they're playing, but there is power that they're supposed to have. And for him, I mean, whatever, we don't need to get too deep into his particular psyche, but it does seem like that was part of the kink, right? Saying it's more fun without safe words, ignoring the consent, having the unhealthy levels of control. It seems that way to me, obviously. Like, don't sue me. It is my opinion.
Allegedly.
Yes, allegedly.
It is my person.
Who's going to sue? Who's going to sue us, though, I wonder?
Armie Hammer is a huge fan of this podcast.
Honestly, though, like, I feel like this is would be taboo to say, but, like, if the stuff he was doing was consensual and he was, like, better informed at it, like, I would have played. I'd play with him.
But, like, right.
Yeah.
No.
Right.
But most of it wasn't. And they're also, you know, the news isn't showing us what the discussions were, right? All we're seeing is, like, what went wrong. And then the power dynamic, I think, is off, right? Mm-hmm. Consent can feel like a tricky thing, but it's not, or it doesn't have to be. It shouldn't be. And so if you feel like you can't say no, that's not consent.
Right.
Right. It makes me feel like I want to put, like, an age on this kind of stuff. Like, you have to be 25 to do it or something. And I know that's impractical and stupid, but it just seems dangerous for people with no experience to be with experienced people in this realm.
I mean, unfortunately, I've certainly hooked up with, like, 40 and beyond people who still have no insight into themselves. So, right. I don't know if it's an age thing, but I do think that it would be great if people did some work on themselves and explore that and had a safe place, whether that be therapy or a community to support that. And that's why I also think that potentially, I don't want to say it's a red flag if you're engaging in kink by yourself, because I don't think that's necessarily true. But I do think that a community can sometimes be a check and balance of the kink that we engage in, and of getting more education and of having mentors and, you know, finding ways to check ourselves and learn more about ourselves. I also think that, and I learned this from a dominant that I worked with, was that if you want to do something to someone else, you should really practice having it done to you first.
Oh.
So that you know what it's like, even if that's not what you're interested in, but just to know, like, okay, well, what does this stinging feeling feel like of cracking the whip on my skin? What does it feel like to bite somebody? And granted, we're all different and are going to have different experiences, but to have that sort of knowledge and experience can be really key.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what you're asking for.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, it sounds like it's really just all about communication. And to your point of, like, we all should be communicating more. We all should be communicating more. It's just a thing people struggle with in general, but let alone when it comes to something that, you know, they might feel shame about. I had an ex-boyfriend who I couldn't get him to tell me what he was into. And I had my suspicions based on a few different cues, but, like, we were never able to really have an open discussion about what it was that he wanted. And I was very open to doing whatever it was. And I don't know what the solution is to that other than just, like, talking about sex more and not having it be this thing that we hide away and pretend shouldn't be talked about.
There are apps and, like, online things that folks can do if they're, you know, struggling to verbalize it at first, just to at least get the ball rolling and get the conversation going. So there's a couple different apps where you can kind of, like, swipe things that you're interested in doing and then have a partner also swipe. And then it will only match, kind of like a Tinder thing. It'll only match the ones that you line up on. There's also ones that kind of promote questions. Obviously, you could go to a sex therapist. There's lots of wonderful professional dominatrix folks. I'm in the LA area, but they're all over the place that you can hire for virtual or in-person consultations and classes and sessions and coaching, which I would recommend even to, like, seasoned folks, just to get new, you know, perspectives and new education. And then there's also, like, online sex questionnaires that basically have a whole list of in-depth stuff, and you get to kind of put those red, yellow, green light stuff next to them of, like, and I'm happy to send it to you and you can put it in the show notes for folks who want to give it a try. But it basically says, like, oh, this is something that I'm down to try. This is something that I'm a little bit iffy about. This is something I've been interested in, but I'm scared to do. This is a hard limit. And you get to kind of explore that together. So
that can be
a stepping stone to just, like, verbalizing it, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
So one of the things we talk about on this podcast a lot is having multiple sources of information, because whenever you only have one person who's telling you how things work, that's when you get into dangerous territory with cult leaders or with abusive dynamics in general. And I think what you're saying resonates in terms of that as well, because if the only person you're getting your information about BDSM from is your partner, who's your first foray into it, that seems like a potentially risky situation. So yeah, getting into a community, getting some diversity of information seems like something that could be really important.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I think that's a great point and a great idea.
I just want to get into, this sort of speaks to Megan's point about like the age limit. Like, so even if somebody is ostensibly consenting, at what point, how do you know if it's grooming? How do you know if it's coercion? If it's somebody who has a lot more power than you, like, how can you kind of protect yourself and proceed carefully? Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah. So you're asking, like, how do you know when it's becoming abusive?
Yeah.
I think if you're leaving the, well, basically, if you're engaging in kink, often when people play, it's called a scene. So if I use that word, that's what that means. But if you're leaving the scenes feeling shitty, and sometimes it can feel like a high sometimes when people play in the kink and BDSM realm. So there's something called dom drop or sub drop, which is basically like afterwards, it's kind of like a drop in energy, almost like I just partied all weekend and now I'm feeling shitty. And that's when you might need something which is called aftercare, which is something that you do for yourself or with that particular partner, either right after or in the days following. Usually you like check in with each other. So I don't mean leaving feeling shitty in that way, but I mean like, you know, leaving feeling worse, I guess, than when you came in. Really listening to your body and having like a not good, you know, that kind of fight or flight response. I agree with what you said about having some checks and balances of community or a therapist. And in terms of finding a therapist, make sure that they're like kink aware and informed too. Because you might be like, oh, I so loved getting hit by my dom last night and I've got these bruises all over my ass and you love it and you feel great about it. But if you're going to a therapist that's not kink aware, they might think, oh, that's abuse.
Right.
Which is not. And so I think, you know, if you're getting feedback from other people who are expressing concern for you, if this person has isolated you from asking questions and from, you know, connecting with other people, if this person is unwilling to wait and stop the play and revisit stuff and talk about it, I would say that's not a great situation. If there is no safe word, if there's no discussion before about what the limits are, if this person isn't willing to go at a pace that works for you, that doesn't necessarily mean, I guess, abuse, but maybe it's not the right fit. Those, I would say, are all some red flags.
That's a really helpful list. I also was wondering, like, I have a very, very brief experience with someone who was, what do you say, a dom? Dom? How do you describe it?
Yeah, a dom.
A dom, sure.
Sounds like madame.
A madame.
And it was very fun. It was very hot. I mean, I ultimately don't think I could do it as a lifestyle to the extent that he does it as a lifestyle. He's had like live-in maids and slaves and stuff like that. I think that's too much for me. But one thing I noticed and was curious about was like, okay, so scenes, you have your scenes that you're doing, but then I noticed that the power dynamics would kind of bleed out into not just like during the course of the scene. Also, you know, texts about that play with like controlling what you're doing. So that stuff is where I get kind of confused. I'm like, at what point is it a sexual thing? And at what point are you just, do you just have a really controlling partner who, you know?
Right. Yeah. So for people who don't know, like, I guess some of the words you were using, you said the word slave, which can obviously be like triggering, I think, for some people, given the, you know, historical connotation. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's different levels, like I said, of the way people engage in this. So there are some people who would call themselves a pro-dom. So that would be a pro-dominant. That's more like someone who's, you know, teaching classes, who's done a lot of trainings, who maybe runs their own dungeon where they see clients and where they do educational opportunities. And then there are, you know, just people who are in their own personal life say that they are a dominant. That doesn't necessarily mean that they are professional. Mm-hmm. So that can be another like red flag too. If you like meet some random person online and they're like, I'm a dom, or like, I'm learning how to be a dom. Not to say you shouldn't explore that with them, but that would be a good thing to have some more questions about, I would say. And not just like random, you know, Tinder person who's like, let me be your daddy right off the bat.
Right, right.
That kind of relationship requires a lot of trust and and can take time to build. And then going back to the slave thing. So basically what that can look like is it's what's called a 24/7 relationship, a 24/7 lifestyle dynamic. And so that means that the kink and BDSM protocol or rules extend beyond just sex. And kink and BDSM doesn't ever have to really be sexual. I think it can be sexual in nature, but a lot of times when people have a scene, it doesn't have to or necessarily involve like genital touching or orgasm. It can involve other things like sensation play, meaning really getting into the sensations of your body, really feeling different instruments on your body, and really leaning into that. But a slave dynamic is where there's sort of an agreed upon dominant and submissive thing as a lifestyle. And so just to give you an example of that, I knew someone who was married to his slave, and they would have certain protocol about, you know, things that she would do around the house, for example, like leaving the toilet seat lid up for him or making the bed a certain way. And I think with that, it's really more about that risk awareness and being curious about like, what is this bringing to me? Is this making me feel good? Or am I feeling controlled in a not good way? Because if you're someone who really likes being told what to do and that's helpful in your life, like, great.
Right.
You know, that lines up just fine. It doesn't always have to be sexual. It can also look like, I don't know, cooking for that partner, shining their boots, shining their latex, cleaning their dungeon, cleaning your own house and sending pictures afterwards to your dominant person. But even with that, I would say most folks I know that engage in that, they still communicate, you know, they still talk about and check in with what's working and negotiate and renegotiate boundaries.
Right.
There are some people I know who maybe have negotiated not to have that, but I think that that really has to be a very specific, informed dynamic.
Do you think it's rare for people to look back after a couple years of a relationship and be like, holy shit, that was not okay? Is it most of the time people are well enough informed that they're like, we're in this together and I know what it is?
I don't think it's rare, and not just in kink and BDSM. I think because of the lack of like sex education and talking about sex, but also, you know, I myself, with all of my knowledge and all of my experiences, like I've been in some abusive dynamics myself. And I think it can be so hard to see when you're in it. You know, and you have, and that's where those checks and balances come in of community and confidants and people that you're talking to that are supporting you, because it can really happen to anybody. Mm-hmm. It's not just people in kink and BDSM. It's, you know, anyone. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that because of some of that lack of education, but also because sometimes people who are manipulative and sociopathic in certain ways are really good at what they do.
Right.
You know, they're really charming and they're really believable and they really bring you in, or they do just enough to keep you like waiting for the crumbs of that connection. Right. So if you've, you know, been vulnerable to that, don't blame yourself. I mean, there's so anyone can be vulnerable to that.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
And so I think there are lots of folks who come away from something, and once they've gotten some space and some distance and done some processing, that they're like, oh, actually, this really wasn't good for me, or this really didn't feel good for me. This really wasn't pleasurable.
Yeah.
Right. I've been there.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. And do you think you knew when you were in it? Like sometimes we do.
Well, that's a great question. I was about to say, oh no, but yes, of course I've been in situations where I'm like, this is not going great.
But sometimes we make excuses. Yeah. Or we feel stuck anyway.
Right. Yeah. I've definitely, I've been in an emotionally abusive relationship where I knew it was happening and I was able to name it as abuse, but I was holding on to the hope of change, you know?
But yeah, it is really cool to think about it in the ways that it does help people and helps people grow and is a positive thing. Because I think, you know, Lola and I come from a backstory of like people putting control over us, or we've been talking a lot about Nexium lately, and it has a lot of these same things going on in it. So it's just hard to separate sometimes.
Yeah. Let's talk about Nexium, actually.
Ooh.
And we've kind of touched on most of this already, but I just like, from the outside, I think it seems really obvious that it was an abusive, culty situation. He like, you know, was branding women's bodies. He had them locked in cages. I actually recently learned, I didn't know the extent of it, but he paddled or even kicked some of the women under the guise of it being for their growth. And when I first started hearing about this, I was like, oh, that's terrible. That's abusive. And then my mom told me, and we've talked about this on another episode. My mom told me, because she knew him separate from our other cult leader, long story, she sort of dated him. Like, she sort of had a thing with him like 10, 20 years before he started Nexium when I was a kid. And he gave her a slave contract. And she did actually sign it, but she tore it up the next day because she like got totally freaked out.
And yeah, so for people who don't know, like, slave contract is basically like, I guess kind of like they have in 50 Shades of Grey in some way, shape or form, where it's this written out, like, here's our protocol that we agree to. And this is what happens when the protocol isn't met.
And his said there was no time limit. It was for all time.
From like a business perspective, I would never sign a contract that says for eternity.
Right.
Right. Well, like, totally.
I think it's great if you want to engage in that for a time, but like, there should always be the ability to renegotiate or cancel this clause within 30 days notice, like, or like without question. Like, I think that's a good thing to keep in mind.
That's totally brilliant. Totally. Yes.
So clearly this man had been sort of planning this thing that he was building for a long time. He obviously wanted to have slaves and created an entire ass sex slave pyramid, which is insane. But I can imagine being in it and thinking, oh, well, this is just this kinky thing that we do. It kind of reframed it for me a little bit, because I thought of it as abuse. And then I realized that my mom sort of had this kinkier dynamic with him, which she quickly shut down. But I could see that being something that happens gradually over time. And it's the gradually over time part that I guess I want to talk about, because something might seem innocuous or might seem like it's just fun and hot at first. And then over time, it changes and you get more comfortable with more and more things.
I mean, I don't know if you feel comfortable saying, or if your mom shared with you, but like, when did she think, okay, this is not, doesn't feel right?
I think right the day after she signed the contract, because she was really, really new to all of it. She had been excommunicated from the Mormon church very recently. And so it all just felt like too much for her very quickly. But I think specifically because of her background, and I think he got better at the gradual thing.
Yeah. Well, I do believe that, like I was saying, if and when we're in what I would call a trauma response, you know, if our nervous system gets overloaded and goes back to a past trauma, or, you know, is feeling a trauma stress response in the moment, I think it can sometimes be hard to discern, you know, what's going on, especially if we're in that freeze response. And folks who have had trauma in their lives are more susceptible to having, and not just any trauma, but I think sexual trauma and relational trauma are more susceptible to having it again, you know, especially if they haven't done any work around it, because of what can kind of happen in the nervous system with that trauma response, or just that person's notions of their boundaries or how to listen to themselves and what cues to listen to and working through that. And so I can't speak as to like what would feel like a red flag for every person, but I would say probably the most helpful thing for me in my own experiences was talking to other people.
Right.
And so while I think it's crucial that we do like trust ourselves, if you've had a life where you haven't felt like you could be in your body, or where your body wasn't safe and you didn't feel like you could trust yourself, are there some folks that you can talk to outside of the experience? Other people who have nothing, no skin in the game,
right?
You know, not just talking about that one person that you trust who's your daddy or your dom or whatever, but other people outside of it who have no, like I said, no skin in the game, and talking to them and getting feedback.
Right.
I think having a more objective person to commune with.
It's definitely a complex thing to get into.
I mean, I don't want to scare people from kink and BDSM because I think it's
totally,
I think it's wonderful. And most of my experiences in the community have been pleasure filled and exciting and wonderful. And I've learned a lot about myself, about other people, about better communication. I think it would be further stigmatizing to say that it's just about the kink and BDSM stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think this
yeah.
can happen in any relationship and in any totally. Dynamic.
Yeah.
I think it often just gets more put in the news when it has the salacious details of kink and BDSM.
Totally.
And it can certainly maybe look like it has higher stakes because of the way that people are playing mm-hmm. in kink and BDSM. But don't let this deter you from exploring an area where there are a lot of folks who do communicate better, who have done that insight work. But, you know, just like any community, there's going to be shitty people everywhere. So yeah. like yep. the kink community is yep. not safe from shitty narcissistic manipulators. The non-kinky community right. is not safe right. from that either. Right. Like there are those folks everywhere. Yeah. And it's not just people who are kinky.
Yeah.
So yeah. a healthy starting dynamic would involve lots of communication about what both parties want, what the boundaries are. And as far as like renegotiating or checking in, like, you know, because say you agree to something at the beginning, how often is like a healthy amount of checking in, would you say?
Whenever you need to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's key too, because let's say you and I are having a scene tonight and like we're like, okay, here's what we talked about doing. Here's what I'm okay with. And in that very moment, in an instant, something shifts for me. I should be able to check in and renegotiate in that instant.
Right.
And not wait until the end after I'm feeling like shitty and dissociated.
Right. That's an important point in general, separate from kink. I think like we actually haven't talked that much about consent on this podcast yet, which we should. But yeah, I think there's been a bit of a cultural shift, but generally like affirmative consent, it's certainly not something I grew up aware of. It's certainly not something that in my first like 30 something sexual encounters existed. I remember the first time someone didn't try to pressure me to have sex after I told him that I didn't want to have sex, my mind was blown. I was like, what's the goal? Like, what are you getting
what's
at here?
Catch?
Yeah. like yeah. I didn't believe him. And I was like well into my 20s when that happened. So generally, like as a culture, I wish that we could just talk about that more. And I'm really happy about shows like, oh shit, what's the one with the very cute Irish couple? Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Oh god, it's on Netflix. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was on Hulu.
Everybody was obsessed with it during quarantine.
Yeah, it's like a very sexy show.
Oh god, I can't think of it, but it sounds good.
I'm gonna Google it because I want to be able to shout it out. Irish couple series.
Hot Irish couple.
Hot Irish couple.
Normal People.
That's what it's called? Normal People?
Normal People, yeah. I think shows like Normal People are doing a great job because there are so many scenes in that show where he's like, is this okay? And it's sexy and it's not like weird. People think it's going to ruin the moment. Like they're asking each other if it's okay. They're checking in. They're getting affirmative consent versus not getting a no. And I think so many of us grew up with like, well, she didn't say no, therefore I'm all good. Like even if she's frozen and her body language is stiff, like she's not saying no, therefore I should just keep going. I want there to just generally be more cultural awareness about this. And I really do appreciate media taking strides toward making that more normalized, normal peopleized.
I get it though. I mean, I think if someone was asking me every 5 seconds, is this okay? Is this okay? Like that would probably right. bring me out of the mood. So, I mean, look, I do think people think that consent check-ins ruin the mood and, you know, can't be sexy. Mm-hmm. So I would invite folks listening to see if they can find and be creative about sexy ways to ask for consent and to respond to consent.
Yeah.
So like, you know, instead of being like, hey, are you okay? Do you want to have sex? Or do you want to have intercourse? Whatever. You could say, I want you to beg me when you want me to put my cock in you.
That would be better.
Yeah. You know, like
that for sure would be better.
Yeah. And that's also knowing that the person is like not frozen and verbal enough to say like, I want your cock right. in me now.
Right.
Or like, put my hand on your pussy when you want me to put my fingers inside you.
Right.
Like, I think there's lots of fun, creative ways where we can get consent. And then, like I said, with the kink idea one, it's just checking in, saying like, what's your color?
I love that. Right. I love that.
And if you're playing in a kink way where you can't speak, whether that's because you're like really enjoying yourself or you're kind of feeling high in your head from the excitement of it all, or you're bound and gagged in some way or have something stuck in your mouth, then come up with an alternative. Like, hold on to, I don't know, some item that feels comfortable for you. And if you need to pause or stop and make sure your partner can see it, then you drop it. Then you let it go.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Those are great. All great ideas.
I mean, yeah, I feel like I've learned so much from you. When you say like sex ed could help in this realm, is the conversation that we're missing in sex ed really just consent? And there could be things that come up that might be different and you just need to really talk to the person?
I mean, shit, that could be like a whole episode. I feel like it's missing so many things. So yeah, consent is one, pleasure is another, comfortability and talking about what you want and how you want it and giving yourself the permission for that, being able to take the time to get to know yourself and your own self pleasure so you know what you like and what you don't like. I feel like all of that would make a huge difference in being able to navigate some of this. And then just like permission and examples of different ways that people express their sexuality. So I'm not saying like give domination lessons to fifth graders, but maybe just talking, finding an age appropriate way to talk about diverse ways that people express themselves and the permission for that. So it's not just some hidden thing that you do when you're drunk. Like, I know that would be another red flag in a lot of Armie Hammer's messages that were out there. He was like, sorry, I'm drunk. And like, while being real, like there are definitely people who go to kink parties where they engage in substances. Technically, you can't consent and like, quote unquote, shouldn't be doing it if you're like not in your grounded mind.
Right.
Yeah. Your sane mind. Right. It's part of the.
Yeah. The safe, sane or risk aware consensual. So there's a lot of things, but look, it's never too late to get that education. There's some wonderful classes happening virtually now. Mistress Justine Cross is a colleague of mine who I've had on the podcast. She has classes all the time about like kink and BDSM 101. And there's so many folks that do that. So, you know, it's never too late to learn.
Love that. Okay, so I have two questions that come from friends. In one text thread with some gals, they were trying to understand when it comes to the cannibalism kink, we were talking about if your kink involves inflicting violence or having violence inflicted on yourself. Because like bone crushing was something that I think came up in some of the Armie Hammer messages. And he was saying your broken body with all your bones broken and blood play, cooking a piece of your flesh. So when it comes to stuff like that, that is like technically harms somebody's body, is it okay? Like how much harm to your personhood is okay if that's what you want? Like, can somebody consent to being eaten?
You know, that's a tricky one because I don't think I can decide that for another person.
Right.
I think if someone's really wanting to get into like that intense kind of play, yeah, I would want them to have support and some community and, you know, being able to be as risk aware as possible of like what that looks like. I also think like, I know with the Armie Hammer thing specifically, a lot of people are saying, oh, well, he said that, so that means he really wanted to do it. And I don't know Armie Hammer, you know, personally. So I can't say for him, but I can say that a lot of people have fantasies that they don't necessarily want to engage in real life.
Right.
And so I think it's can be a great fantasy outlet to like talk about that taboo forbidden stuff. And that doesn't mean you're going to do it or want to engage in it.
Right.
But I don't think it's for me to decide for other people. But also I want to say really quick, I think that like I'm one therapist and I'm one person who engages in some of this myself. And so you might get different answers, you know, from different folks that you talk to based on their own experiences, their own triggers. Yeah. Their own stuff that's happened to them. So just like we're urging folks to not just listen to that one person. I want you to listen to this episode, but I would say, don't just listen to me, like go do some more digging on this. If this is stuff that you're curious about.
Right. That's great advice. The other question was, I'm directly quoting this text because this was a hilarious text. And she said I could direct quote it. Okay. She said, I really want to know about when you get really into something and then it keeps escalating to more extreme and how to prevent that with BDSM. Like, it starts with handcuffs and it ends with hanging yourself while beating your meat.
Wow, Danan.
Well, interestingly, they said hanging yourself. So it's kind of like they were their only barometer. Right? So like they kept it going, I guess.
Yeah.
As opposed to like someone else doing it. But in general, the question I'm hearing is like, if you want it to stop, or when do you know if it's going too far?
I mean, it sounds like she's talking about compulsively, like, because your tolerance is building, like how your porn gets more extreme when you get more into porn, maybe. Is that, am I interpreting that correctly? I don't know.
I don't know. I think it can sometimes be a misnomer, because to me that might just be like your shame is lifting, mm-hmm. you know? So I think it's, I mean, I only think it's really potentially problematic if it's like, if you're doing risky stuff in secret without knowing the potential precautions, you could die,
right?
You know, and really hurt yourself.
Right.
And so I think as long as you're engaging in some risk aware stuff and you have some safety measures, I'm into what I guess what I would call edge play, which is like pushing the edge of what you're comfortable with. Mm. But not in an abusive way, just in like, this is something that does make me feel a little uncomfortable. And, I'm interested to see more of what that looks like. Mm-hmm. And so to me, like I said, if it's risk aware and consensual and it's not getting in the way of your life or impacting your relationships, then I think it's great. You know, if this person who's continually escalating stuff has a partner that is doing that with them and they're feeling good about it and not ashamed and being risk aware, like, who cares?
right.
Go have it. Yeah, this is so, so endlessly fascinating. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you pleasure. So much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh my God, so informative.
Woo!
Okay, Megan.
Yes.
So tell me, so would you get involved with a man like Armie Hammer?
Oh my gosh. Okay, let me think about that. I think certainly in my past, I would have gotten possibly caught up in that. That was a really bad answer.
Do you think you would be, I mean, obviously now you're in a happy relationship.
Right.
But do you think that, actually, it is an interesting question because we sort of have talked about a celebrity who you really admired on a much earlier episode who you said had built a cult life for himself. Yes. And you said you did not want to keep pursuing things
with
him.
That's true. You're right. Yeah, I do. I think I've aged out of it.
Who knows? There
are exactly.
Who very knows? Manipulative people who start very slow. And that's the whole thing about them is that they do it gradually.
Yeah.
We're never safe.
I'm never immune. That is so true. Yep. Well, I mean, enjoy your sex life. Go take some risks tonight in the bedroom.
Some well thought out risks. Go fucking take those
mm-hmm.
risks.
Mm-hmm. Think things through.
Get tied up. Fucking leave the toilet seat up. Mm. You do you, man. We're here for it.
Let us know what you do, too. Go on Instagram and DM us.
No.
I do. No. What am I asking for? Holy moly.
You're asking to get the dirtiest DMs of all time.
We do not want that. Okay, Lola.
But if somebody does feel empowered to explore their kink, I do want to know that.
Yeah, great. Exactly.
Just maybe don't go into detail.
Yeah, okay. Cool. Okay, you guys. I think we can all agree this was one fantastic episode.
And outro. You can listen to Nicoletta Heidegger's podcast, Sluts and Scholars, wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find me, Lola, on Instagram at oolalola, oohlalola. And Twitter, I'm oolalola, oohlalola.
And you can find me on Instagram at vibehigherbitch.
And you can find us on our website, trustmepod.com. Okay. Ooh,
remember to follow your gut. Watch out for red flags. And never, ever
trust me.
Bye. Bye.